This podcast is from heptagonclub.co.uk and paulcarenza.com. The Heptagon Club.
Heptagon Club.
Heptagon Club with Paul Carenza. 7 guests, 7 corners.
On this week's show.
How I had an M&S 3 for 2 sticker on, stuck on my breast.
Spice Girls, yes. Spice Girls. They wanted skills. To our offices back in the 90s.
What's a conch?
I'm learning today. Dado rail and a conch.
They're the two magic words of the week.
And your host,
Mr. Paul Carenza.
Welcome, friends. Welcome to the Heptagon Club. I'm Paul Carenza. What's your name? Oh, well, you can tell me later. That's fine. What a show for you we have this week with some fantastic guests. Tim Vine, Dominic Holland, my pals Russ and Jen, music supremo Nick Battle, a fascinating acquaintance I met on a train called Belinda Campbell. I mean, the train wasn't called that, the acquaintance was. She's got a unique take on, let's call it for now, a show from the 80s. And we might even have a little bit of Michael Bublé later. We might not. That is the chance that you take. Did I even mention we've got Miranda Hart this week? We've got Miranda Hart this week. I'm so, so pleased that she said she'd come along on the show. If you're listening just because you like Miranda, you are most welcome. Stay a while. Why not? Look around. Explore the exhibits. Last week's episode, we had Sally Phillips, who plays Tilly in Miranda. That was a great chat with her. And we've got more from Miranda and indeed from Sally in future weeks. So do subscribe if you can. Stick around. And thank you for joining us. We've got a lot of name-dropping this week. I do encourage name-dropping on this show, so that is entirely my fault that we've gone that way. But first up, let's have Miranda. She's over here in the Heptagon Club, our first guest this week.
Hey, Miranda.
Hi, hey. Paul.
And she's brought a friend.
Thanks for coming to this podcast party. Yeah. And you're here when you brought Peggy as well, which is nice.
Yeah. Peggy the dog, unless anyone thinks I've
That's very true.
An old woman.
Oh, everyone knows you have Peggy the dog, I'm sure.
Do they not? Peggy does also sound like a granny character.
Did you name her Peggy? Or was yes. Peggy, you did name her Peggy. Mm.
She was called Eunice.
Eunice?
Yeah.
Miranda's new book, Peggy and Me, is out now, actually, and we'll be adding it to our book list of guests. So many of our guests have books out. So you can join our Facebook group, find the Heptagon Club on there. You can find the link to the books of all of our guests who have those out. So each week we have 7 guests, 7 corners of this club, from joke corner to travel to trivia, for our party O-Mingling. So it's drinks and nibbles galore here. And before we get on to talk about Miranda's sitcom, I did need to make sure she's got a nice cuppa.
I'm sipping a cup of tea.
That's nice. I think a cup of tea is perfect for this.
I'm very radio friendly.
That's very radio friendly. I think we hear the occasional slurp will be quite nice.
Yeah, that'd be nice, yeah.
Oh, nice. Listen to that slurp. Oh, and a slurp and a choke.
I did my own sound effects. It caused me to choke.
I'm sensing that was more of a slurp than you'd normally wish to do then.
Also, I'm just briefly distracted because I've got a Fitbit.
Oh.
Which connects to my phone, which is right. On silent. But my Fitbit's telling me that someone's ringing me.
Oh, do you want to answer
I'm
the phone
so
call?
I'm so on trend.
Would you just look at this. This is what they do nowadays. Would you like to answer your phone?
No, I won't. Okay, fair enough. Didn't say who it was then, did I?
You didn't, know, did you? You didn't. Although I did see. So,
okay.
So there you go. Silent
it's
secret.
Between us.
It's fine. The tea is welcome in this podcast. You know, this is the tea part of any party.
The tea party, I think, is the best kind of party.
That is it the best kind of party?
I genuinely, and I'm not just saying this, the last party I hosted, I'm not very good at hosting, but I had a sort of outdoor picnic type thing. Everyone arrived at 4, sandwiches, scones, cake. Then we segued quite neatly and as soon as possible into sort of crisps,
right,
dips, olives and beers. But by asking them to arrive at 4, it meant that by 9:30, it felt like 1 in the morning. And everyone's like, oh, I think I'm going to go. And you're like, I've had the best party and wow. I'm in bed at 10:30.
Oh, that's great. That's what you need, isn't it?
It's genius.
Yeah. Yeah, because otherwise you do find you start, if you don't start till 8 o'clock in the evening and people arrive late or something.
Then you're eating at 9.
Yeah.
No.
Then you have to just use coffee as a way to get rid of people. A coffee?
Yeah.
Which is the way of saying 10 minutes and you're out.
Wait yourself up and get a cab.
Yeah, be gone.
Get out of my house.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
No, so tea. And also, there's nothing better than finger food.
Well, true.
It's just jolly and fun and childlike.
It is, isn't it?
Mm.
Just dive in. Savoury or sweet? Probably a bit of both.
Bit of both, but gun to head for longevity of life, savoury.
True.
For my last meal, sweet.
That's true. So meteor striking soon. Dive into the sweet.
Too right.
Yeah. I'm glad we've solved that. That's good to know.
Meteor should be the name of a chocolate bar.
Because it will then you'd see the chocolate bar and think, oh, if that were hitting now.
Yeah.
You're right.
It sounds sort of meaty, but not
sounds like it's got
literally
meat in it.
Meaty.
That's true, yeah.
But it's a meaty chocolate bar, a bit like, say, a Boost.
Oh, yeah. Love a Boost.
I miss a Boost.
Well, they're out there to be had, aren't they?
I know, but then, you know.
I know what you mean. It's
sure, you know, it's 17 stone.
Exactly. All because of Boosts.
So we're three episodes into the Heptagon Club, and it has been noted by one or two people that the guests I tend to get are people I either have or do work with in some way. And yes, obviously that is the case. So Miranda, I did a bit of writing for her sitcom and a small cameo that I've nagged her for years. And the same with Tim Vine, with Not Going Out. And so this is why I'm trying to get Michael Bublé this week. You see, I have just done a TV show, Bublé at the BBC. It's on BBC One this very week, and I got to do some writing for it. I didn't write any of the songs, I should point out, although one researcher did think that I had. It was very nice of her to think that I'd written something that Frank Sinatra sang 60 years ago. Not that old. But so I have been trying to get Michael Bublé just to give us a little bit of audio for the podcast. I'm still hoping he'll turn up, basically. That's what I'm saying. For now, though, back to Miranda.
Your own sitcom... is of course brilliant, obviously.
Cheers, Paul.
As, you know, and I mean, both the performance, the writing as well is
why did you mention the writing?
I don't know. It just happened to be one of the first. Yeah. The vision mixing. Okay, everything, every part of it's
this
really
is weird
good.
That you mentioned the writing.
It is weird. I don't know why it was in my head.
Yeah.
But what?
And didn't you particularly love the customer in series three?
The customer in series three. Who I didn't realise you just told me is. Was the only one to buy anything?
Yeah, you
shop.
Were the only. You played the only customer who had a legitimate purchase.
Wow! Wow! Keeping the shop afloat.
Yeah, you were
for
literally.
Three
it's you. Yeah.
Wow! I had no idea. That is amazing. I'm going to rewatch it again just to see that there must be someone somewhere who buys a thing.
I think there were some other buying ones, but not as sort of. You've got the full transaction.
Yes.
And you were thrown out after the purchase, not before.
That's true.
Sorry, and, I interrupted your question.
No, it was a fine interruption.
How rude.
It was a much better interruption than my question, which was, are any of the fun things that happened in the show happened in reality?
Ooh, trade secrets.
Or can you not tell us? Or are there similar things that you go, oh, that happened once, and I'm going to change that to that thing?
There were some things. I tell you what happened, and it happened to me the other night as well. But instead of laughing about it, I got really cross. You know, a shower hose that you can have over the bath, and you have one of those handles where you either push it to the, turn it so that the water comes through the bath tap.
Oh, yes.
Or then you, like a handle, and you turn it, and it's on the shower hose. And it was on the shower hose when I thought it was the bath, so I turned the bath on, straight, and the shower hose just went everywhere, and sort of like a sort of rampant snake. I was going to say ejaculating snake.
You could say
and
that.
And I really shouldn't have ever said that's
like
what I was going to say.
I like
but
the
there,
fact that you've said it anyway.
I've said it.
That's good to know.
I've said it.
That's good to know.
Yeah. See, I am really actually very edgy in real life.
Clearly.
That's my edgy comedy.
Yes.
So that happened and I wrote that into series two and it happened the other night and I got really cross because there's water all over my paint in my bathroom.
Never as fun in reality, is it?
No.
It's when you do it on set and there's a crew there to help you out.
And I did get locked in a park once and that was in series one. And had to squeeze out of a small gate. But in the sitcom, I was just in a bra, so I sort of sitcommed the reality.
Okay.
So that's what it is, really. It's sitcomming what actually might happen.
I see, because you think that's it was funny anyway, but just to make sure, let's...
But there are often... Oh, and being called Sir happened.
Really?
Less now, luckily, but it does happen. And then I got accused of that being ridiculous, as if anybody... I'm misogynistic because as if any woman would be called Sir.
Do you
not
reckon
quite
that,
over that yet.
Do you reckon that someone out there, when they saw that on TV, go, oh, I did that, there you go, it was me.
That was me. No, because there's been more than one.
Really?
But yeah, it regularly happens. No, but I was thinking the other day how I had an M&S, well, about 3 years ago, an M&S 3-for-2 sticker stuck on my breast. But I never found
not
a place.
Not deliberately?
No.
Right.
And no one told me, I was in a meeting.
Oh, no.
But I never found a place for that in the Miranda world. I don't think it would have read on television.
No.
But that sort of thing happens.
That sort of
to me.
Thing does
think,
happen.
Why
yeah.
are you not telling me that it says 3-for-2 on my breasts?
My 2-year-old daughter does that but deliberately. So she'll wear like this thing that says 99p or the stickers that she asked me the other day why bananas have stickers and the other fruit aren't allowed stickers. I think bananas.
Apples have stickers.
Apples do sometimes have stickers, don't they?
She needs to really think this through, your daughter.
We get the ones
How old is she?
She's two.
She's an idiot. Yeah. She really should.
It's because the apples we get are in bags that don't have the stickers on.
But fair enough. The bananas, I'll give her that.
So, you know, she should get out there and see more apples.
Yeah, she really
clearly,
should.
You know. But
she lives a sheltered life.
Clearly she thought that bananas have been good at the dentist and no one else has.
Sometimes satsumas have stickers.
Some of them do. Mm. Yeah. She lives a sheltered life.
I find it discombobulating, a pear with a sticker.
I can't think I've ever seen a pear with a
sticker. Yeah, I've seen a pear with a sticker.
Really?
I didn't like it. I really hope people start emailing you about stickers on fruit.
I like to think we started a trend.
Or other stickers on unusual fruit. I mean, you would never find a stick on a pineapple.
Well, where would you stick it?
That's a very good point.
You'd pierce the sticker, wouldn't you?
You might as well try and put a stick on a hedgehog.
Exactly. It's even more difficult, probably, because they're going to walk away. A sleeping hedgehog.
That's Miranda Hart off to do some mingling. Now, let's get a drink for this man here, Tim Vine.
Nice wine. We're off.
Cheers, exactly.
He's the second of our seven guests this week in our club with seven corners.
Which corner are we in?
Got a joke corner, probably. Yeah. Welcome to the party. Hooray.
Well, it's great to be here. It's incredible wallpaper. Where did you get this wallpaper?
Yes, it's incredible.
It's a lovely design. What pattern is that?
Well, the dado rail is it's a Harrods Lidl crossover they've been working on.
Right. They don't have the dado rail so much, do they? Still have it at the odd fairground, don't they? It goes between it does, attractions. Mean. What is a dado?
So to have two different wallpapers, you can have one on the bottom and then a dado rail.
Ah, halfway up.
And then, so often it's plain on top and then a pattern on the bottom or something.
It's a way of covering the fact that you didn't have enough wallpaper.
It is.
For the whole
wall. It's like a belt for rooms.
Yeah.
You know, so you can have a top off.
Exactly that. Sometimes they have panelling along the bottom. This is all great. This is listable
this is
stuff.
This solid gold. Solid gold, this is. Let me
you
ask you
this next time you're on a panel show.
Okay, exactly. Let me ask. Well, the panel shows you've done in the past. I know you've done Room 101. Is that a panel? That counts as a panel show.
Is that a panel? What is a panel show?
I don't know really.
Oh, there's three of you sitting in a line.
Yeah, a comedy thing where people talk.
Is I did Room 101. I don't think I'm very good at panel shows generally. That one's all right because they come to you to talk.
That's true. That's true.
When you're sort of you're expected to sort of make your own gaps.
Yes.
I get a bit scared.
Yes, we're not Mock the Week, where there's almost too many people. If they had a...
I think if they did Mock the Week and they said, we've decided from now on everyone's going to talk in an order.
Yes.
I'd go, right, I'm on.
If they had a conch, they could just pass it around. Like
exactly. What's a conch? I'm learning today. A dado rail and a conch.
The two magic words of the week. A conch is...
I went, yeah. Show, as people do at parties, don't they? They go, yeah. Not knowing what it was.
They pass it around at parties. take a whiff.
You mean like a...
So you can speak. It's your speaking prop.
Oh, I see.
If you have the conch, you can speak.
Right. So, yeah. So it could be anything. It could be a vase. It
could be a vase. It could be anything. It's what you've got handy. You don't need to go and get a conch if you've not got one.
No, okay. And what's conch short for? It must be short for something, isn't it?
Conscience? I don't know. No, I think it's just... it's a big seashell, I think. Is it? I presume
it was
a former animal, is it, that then has died and... I don't know.
Right,
like
keep
a
it light.
Sea snail? I don't know. You pass around the dead animal and then
talk about stuff they've lost.
You say a few words about the eulogy for the...
Yeah.
I don't know how it works, to be honest.
What's eulogy? No, I'm joking. It's going to be a party with a 5-year-old.
This is an educational podcast. Hey, speaking of educational, your brother is Jeremy Vine.
He is,
He does Eggheads as well, doesn't he?
He does,
I think he's Radio 2 guy.
Yeah.
And you hosted game shows, and you've been on game shows.
Yes.
Are you the only two sibling Kusha hosts ever to have existed? I wonder if that is a thing.
That's interesting, isn't it?
I don't know.
He's
a thinker.
Yeah, he's a bit of a thinker. One thing that Jeremy doesn't have is an audience on Eggheads.
Oh, okay.
That would frighten me a bit.
Right.
I'd be throwing jokes out into this
that's true.
Chasm. But
yes,
so there's a slight difference. I actually at the moment can't think of any other siblings. Never mind. Are we the only siblings in the world?
You may be the only siblings, all only children.
Have the Attenboroughs done game shows?
I doubt it.
Neither of them.
I don't think either of them. I know David was BBC Two commissioner, so he must know.
I've thought of one.
Oh, have you?
I reckon Jonathan Ross and Paul Ross.
Ah, you might be right. You might be right.
Paul Ross, I reckon, definitely.
Yeah, Jonathan Ross at some point must
he must have.
Must have done one.
Yeah, it might be something he's shied away from there because it's more chat with him, isn't it?
That's true, but...
Yeah, well, that sort of answered that.
Well, there you go.
That's a very good question, though.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know.
The Heptagon Club.
Seven guests, seven corners. The Heptagon Club with Paul Forenza.
So that's Tim. Much more of him in a future episode. We'll be popping back for a much longer chat in a podcast yet to come. So, yes, I am guilty of exploiting my contacts. I'm lucky enough to write for and alongside some tip-top stars like Miranda and Tim, and this week been writing for Michael Bublé. Well, not writing his songs as such, but writing some links and things for him and Claudia Winkleman for this new BBC show, Bublé at the BBC, it's called. It's on the telly box, Thursday, November 3rd, 8 p.m, BBC One. I know you're probably listening in the far future, but here back in early November, it's happening this week. So they asked me to be on hand in case Claudia Winkles needed anything written and to help concoct a fun hidden camera sketch with Mickey Bubbles himself. So that was a lot of fun. I had to try and get him on the podcast, didn't I? I had to spend 3 days with this guy. Well, just before performance time on the Heptagon Club, Michael Bublé, come over here.
Hello.
You're quite quiet, Michael.
I'm saving my voice.
You're what? He's writing it down for us. Saving your voice for the singing. Right. Well, do you want to write down your answers? Thanks for being on the Heptagon Club. What's your favourite song? Feeling Mute. Okay. Oh, yeah, of course, that Frank Sinatra song. And then you go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like, anything, really. Just say anything. That'll be really helpful. Well, look, okay, while we try and get something more out of Michael, here is a music maestro from the other side of the mic, a songwriter, an A&R guy, a musician too, and a great bloke. What's more, he can speak.
Nick Battle, hooray!
Hooray!
Hooray! Nick Battle. How would you? People who don't know of your oeuvre, what do you? What are you? You're a man of the world, really, aren't you?
I have done most things in life. Yeah. I've been a steelworker, a postman, a musician, an author. I'm a funeral celebrant. I run a charity. I write books. I'm in a music publishing company, but I'm my own boss and do my weekends off.
I think we better start with a bit, because we're here surrounded by discs and signs of... There's a five-piece band there I'm vaguely familiar with called the Spice something, is that
Spice
right?
Girls, Spice yes, Girls, yes. They wandered into Girls. Our offices back in the 90s. Their manager, Simon Fuller, was a friend of mine, and we signed their music publishing.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a terrible day for music, and indeed for me.
So, do we blame...
I've never really recovered.
No, exactly, yeah. I still was, you know, the thing is, it's a very easy sort of tongue-in-cheek thing to say, do we blame you, of course, for this thing.
No,
but
actually, that's not
fair. They were phenomenal, they were
I think
absolutely.
They were just incredible. And
they were amazing.
One of their greatest talents was their unity, but yeah. Also Simon's management skills and the way he's gone on to do great things still. I'm still working with Victoria and David.
Right.
Beckham, by the way, never named the Queen told me that.
of course.
You know, that's still kind of, yeah. You know, it's wonderful. And they sold over 40 million records in a very short space of time. And, very grateful for that.
And so who else? And Michael Ball is...
he's from the sublime to the ridiculous, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Michael, one day I was working at Decca Records and I had a phone call saying, would you like to meet with Michael Ball? So yeah, I might meet with Michael. And he wants doing a best of, they want to record three tracks and he wants to do a diva song. So I said, well, let's do Albert Hammond's When You Tell Me That You Love Me that Diana Ross recorded.
Oh, yeah.
And he wants to do a show song. And I think he did a song from the Jekyll and Hyde film now, which... This Is The Moment.
Oh, yes. Done that one, yeah.
And then he said, I'd like to write a song. I said, well, but I'm a bit shy about writing. I said, well, why don't you come out to my house and write with me? Because I'm a bit shy about singing. And when you've heard me sing, you'll know why. He went, well, don't mind if I do. So out he came. And we did a song called What Love Is For. And then made four more records together, including music, which did very well. So, yeah, that was Michael.
Tell me if this sounds like Michael Bohr. I was at the Radio 2 thing when he was covering for Ken Bruce.
Yes.
And suddenly, like, the lift, we're all there sitting quietly, you know, it's like sort of 8:30 in the morning. Lift doors open and out burst Michael Ball.
Love changes everything.
That's the exact tone. That's the exact tone. Literally, the lift doors open. Anyone else walk at lift door would just be like, oh, hello, or, you know, most. Probably just walk out, don't say anything. He burst out and went, don't panic, everybody. Radio 2 is saved. Michael's here. Announcing to the office. No one else I've never seen ever announce themselves to an office before.
But the thing is about singers, and I've got another friend who's a singer called Jonathan Vera. They're big personalities. Their job is to fill people like Russell Watsons and Michael Balls and Jonathan Vera's of this world, Bryn Terfel. Their job is to fill a theatre without a microphone.
Yeah, yeah.
So they have to have the balls and braggadocio, whatever you call it, whatever I'll have some pizza and pasta carbonara, yeah, thank yeah. you. But you have to have that to fill that whole of that environment.
The many songs you've written. Do you know how many songs you've written?
Too many.
Too many.
And not enough have been recorded by enough people.
Clearly, so clearly. Do you have a favourite? Is there a favourite or one that you think hasn't, that has got something that has not been grabbed hold of yet in a way that should be? Or something?
Oh, golly. I wrote a song called Everything after my first wife passed with a friend called Hugh Goldsmith, who was then A&Ring, or in fact, back on his own label with Blue and Atomic Kitten and Billy Piper. And we had that song recorded by Paolo Nutini, had it recorded by Natalie Imbruglia, demoed, I think. And then we even had a version sent to Will Young after it was his first big album. And none of those just didn't happen.
Right.
And for me, I kept thinking, well, now I'm kind of glad. Mm. It would have been nice at the time as a beacon for the future. But yeah, I've got loads of songs I'd love people to record. Please do email me, nick.battle@mac.com. I'll send you lots of lovely songs.
Yeah.
Being able to create and communicate, it's you know, we have that classic phrase, isn't it? You know, the three C's, cleaning, cooking and coitus, you know. Now, for me, no, it's not that, gentle listener.
Yeah.
It's to be able to create, communicate and be compassionate.
Yeah.
And those are the three things that, if I have a headstone, if indeed I can afford one by the time I pass, or if anybody wants to put together a few shillings, it'd be marvellous. But if it simply said he was a creative man, he was a compassionate man and he communicated well.
You've met many, but nicest celebrity you've met? Or who's the biggest surprise? Is there one? Not the biggest, but a pleasant surprise.
David Essex was nice.
David Essex.
He was a kind man, nice man.
Nice.
Very
good
kind
to
my wife. Very kind to my stepmom. Engelbert probably is the most old-fashioned gentleman of show business, who I still hear from occasionally. Bear in mind, I've no use to him whatsoever.
Very nice.
Cliff was lovely. I remember they recorded my first song with him in about 83. And I had no money. I went busking to earn the cheap fare to go to Abbey Road to hear him sing. And I think we went out for dinner with a couple of people. And then he dropped me home along my co-writer, Sasha, in his Rolls Royce.
Nice.
And the juxtaposition of actually busking to earn the money to go to Abbey Road to hear him sing his song, taking over Rolls Royce, was bizarre, but kind of lovely.
Now, did I detect a frisson at the mention of Cliff Richard among some of our listeners? It's tricky, isn't it? Proven innocent and yet mud sticks in this post-Yew Tree world. It's tricky too for those in proximity to the fallen star, especially if it's a different star who we know is guilty. After the Jimmy Savile case, spare a thought for those whose memories are tarnished. On a train journey not long ago, I met a delightful lady called Belinda Campbell. She lost her father young, 30 years ago, and his job was, here's Belinda with what I think is a fascinating insight, and she's brought props.
Belinda, so we met on a train, and when we were talking about, tell us about your dad.
My dad was the director of Jim Will Fix It. They did have a few different directors, but he was the director in the 80s, mid-80s.
Right.
Kind of early to mid-80s. And so as a kid, I used to go to Jim Will Fix It all the time, and to the studios, Shepherd's Bush.
Wow.
Get picked up in a taxi from Twickenham, whisked off after Green Room or whatever it was. We were tiny, looking at all these people in this place, in this room afterwards. But I got to meet all my favourite pop stars. I collected autographs. I've got Legs & Co. I don't know if you remember
Legs &
Co.
Oh, yeah. So this is the...
Isla St. Clair.
Yeah, Legs & Co. did Top of the Pops. They were one of the dance troupes, weren't they?
Yeah, they had... In the 60s, it was Pounds People. Yeah. Then it was Legs & Co.
Right.
So I met people like that, Lenny Henry... Madness, Dollar. So it was real 80s stuff.
Yes.
And the fashion was so bad, I spent ages getting ready.
Right.
I loved the environment, all the lights, the kind of, you know, the corridors and the rooms, the makeup. Jimmy Savile's dressing room, popped in there a few times.
So presumably there's nothing to tell us here that should be forwarded to the police or anything. Because it must be, look at the Jim Will Fix It thing first then. Does it feel like a sort of before and after all of this came out, all of the Jimmy Savile stuff?
It was really strange. My brain unlocked memories from a teenager. So if you're in your 40s and suddenly something, a key, unlocks your mind, it was quite a strange experience.
And was so presumably the memories of it beforehand all sort of
simmered down,
rose-tinted and lovely and whatever.
And they kind of fade into a compartment in your mind. They're always there.
Of course,
but these up. Everything came back.
And it must be, I suppose, given that your dad was director of the show.
Yeah, he was the director of Jim Will Fix It.
So your memory of Jim Will Fix It is still, you know, people are there sort of...
I had a great time.
It's still happy memories.
It was magical.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have two sisters, so the three of us went. Sometimes I'd go filming off-site, but not that much. Sometimes I'd sit in the gallery, but it was more in the studio, on the beanbags. Except the one time he put three of us in the theatre seats and placed Bananarama in front of us. So when they moved, our heads appeared in between the three girls. Because we were three girls, they were three girls.
Right, that fits.
Plus their fix-it girl.
Yes, okay. So they're singing...
but it was his idea.
Robert De Niro's Waiting, and then you're
yeah, 84. That was probably the last time I ever went there.
Oh, really?
Before my dad passed away, yeah.
Right, so yeah, and your dad passed away soon after in the 80s, was it?
Yeah, in 1985.
85, right. And which I think was about when Jim or Fix-It ran till, was it?
They carried on. They did carry on. They probably had a break or something, but they did... It kept going till the 90s, I think.
Oh, was it? Oh, right. Yeah. It's about 20 years, wasn't it, all in? Yeah. It's a long running... I mean, this is the thing. It's when all this... When it all... This was in the news about Jimmy Savile years ago. 20 years of our lives that you sort of feel, that's a lot. That's why it was such an impact.
I remember when I was tiny, my dad explained that we weren't allowed to have anything fixed for us. And we were a bit upset. But he said you could, because he worked on the show, but he said you can write pretend letters. So my sister said, can you fix it for me to have my ears pierced, but I'll scream and scream. And mine was, can you fix it for me to go to the moon? You know?
Well, you're thinking it won't be fixed anyway, it might as well aim high.
And the little one was a bit too little to write anything. But it was magical. I remember feeling a bit jealous once when one girl was meeting a pop band that I quite liked.
Right. So you couldn't go along as well and be directorial assistant.
No. Lamar from Kajagoogoo, my dad said, you know, you're going to love this. He's on the show. So I spent ages getting ready. Thought I looked wonderful. Thought I looked the part to meet my favourite pop star. Went along to his dressing room, and as I turned the corner to look in to say hello, he'd just taken a mouthful of pizza and all this cheese was coming out of his mouth. And it just shattered my whole illusion of him. He was my heartthrob, and there he was eating like a piglet.
Never meet your heroes, they say, isn't it? Because you'll see them eating pizza. So you're still in touch then with the producer?
Producer, Roger Ordish.
Roger. And so, equally, so you know, the people who are still around from the Jim will fix it. Yeah. They must have. Again, it must be a very confusing.
Yeah, I think they feel. I was quite protective over them at the beginning. So I remember writing to Roger Ordish saying, don't you ever forget how much hard work you put into this, and don't let it undo that. But unfortunately, it does have an effect on them all, because once they were proud to speak about their career, now they feel.
Yes.
A bit uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And blame is sometimes thrown your way.
Yeah, and that's a shame as well, because it's not just one of those things where people go, oh, well, that happened. It's such a big
you must have known, all the finger-pointing.
Exactly.
And so for me, I find it difficult to... It's almost like I've divided it in two. My childhood memories, I don't want to let go of, so I'm keeping them happy, like in a bubble. And what we found out today, that's in another bubble. But I still, although I do believe it, I still find it difficult to associate that voice, that face... I watched that Louis Theroux program, and I kept watching him, and I kept rewinding on the YouTube and playing it over and over again, thinking, watching his reaction, and you can't see into people's minds. You might see something in their eyes, but people can disguise things so well, especially if their neck's on the line.
Of course,
They're going to do it really well, and they're going to get good at it.
Totally, yes, yeah.
And if you're hanging out with people who also do it, you're going to learn tips off them.
I suppose so, yeah. But yeah, you forget that, you know, just before all of this came out, there was, I think, was it Shane Ritchie was hosting a tribute show to Jim will fix it, with a view of reviving this show, and let's do Shane will fix it, or whatever it might be, you know, because it's a great format, isn't it? You know, and it was 20 years.
I was a house producer for a small record company in Finchley, and a boss came back from holiday in Spain, and he brought in this record. He went, he said, what do you think of that? Well, I can't tell you exactly what I thought of a gentle listener, but suffice to say, I said, I think it's a pile of poo, probably sold a million copies. My friend went downstairs, Simon, and he made the record, and then they decided they needed a bunch of people, so they formed a fictional band called The Tweets.
Right.
And for the song, it's called The Birdie Song.
Nowadays, that means something different, doesn't it, The Tweets?
Entirely. So you see, even then,
it comes
ahead of the
time. Head of the game, absolutely.
Clearly,
yeah.
Decades ahead. And I remember getting a phone call one day saying, Nick, we need another bird for Top of the Pops. Can you be the fluffy chicken in the orange tights? And to my eternal shame, or perhaps not, I declined.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can't. Imagine meeting your mother up and going, by the way, I'm the one with the pink beak, the fluffy...
There's a line, isn't there? There's a line.
You know, crossed it. You know?
Yeah.
So I've been responsible for that and other pop misdemeanors along the way, in fairness.
Wow.
Because I did say, it's great, you should do it.
Yeah.
And clearly, they did very well out of it.
They did all right out of it, didn't they?
Yeah.
But you didn't get to share that glorious stage on Top of the Pops.
Happily.
Happily.
There has to be a modicum of taste involved in this
process. You've got to retain something, haven't you, of yourself?
Some small vestige, tiny crevice of credulity.
Hope you've enjoyed the podcast this week. We do ask you to bring a bottle. Just bring something to a party, if you would. Give something back to us. We have previously had liking us on Facebook, rating us on iTunes. This week's Bring a Bottle moment is simply to tell someone offline, a real conversation with a person that says, hey, I've enjoyed listening to this here podcast. You can even get hold of their phone, download the podcast app if they haven't got it, and subscribe us on their phone for them. That would be really helpful to us and for them. Then they'll have it on their podcast. So, you know, if you want to wrestle it off them, get their phone, download the podcast thing, subscribe to us. Why not? Or just tell them about us. Tell them about the Heptagon Club and that they should tune in. Thank you.
So we've got, look, what have we got here then? Over here, Jim fixed it for me.
That's a soap.
That's a soap.
A friend gave me that because I was never obviously allowed to do one. But I did ask my dad when I was at junior school, can me and my friends go on the programme? Mm. So he did arrange for us. One day we all got called into the headmaster's office and explained that Belinda's dad has arranged for some filming. So we were stuck into a factory. We all made the beanbags or helped make them stuff them. And then we came into the studio and delivered our beanbags onto the set. So it wasn't a fix-it. We fixed it for the studio.
Yeah, that's good. That's
we did
good.
Some soft furnishings.
Yeah.
But so a friend gave me that badge. But we got a huge one for our hall, school hall. Yes. It was up on the wall. I don't know where that went.
No.
That was a school in Twickenham.
It's in storage now somewhere. Yeah.
So the NASA jacket that you just saw in the photo, that was given to my dad by NASA. They did some filming there.
Okay.
These are my sisters. That's obviously they're on the beanbags.
Great. Yeah.
Mini script. It's very mini.
Oh, it's a tiny script, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a proper. It's a proper script.
Filming and recce schedule. Jim will fix it. There you go.
Yeah. My dad on the chair.
Yes, the big chair.
We used to go sit in that chair a lot.
Did you?
Things came out of both sides.
Yeah.
And I always remember Jimmy Savile had a ring that went over both fingers. When you saw it on the other side, you know, you put a ring on one finger. It was a ring for two fingers, and it was an encrusted diamond, huge thing.
Right.
So I remember seeing that on there and asking him about it, and he was just showing me his hand, turning it over and showing it went over two fingers. So that was the chair. In real life, it didn't look as, you know, like on the television, things look a bit more rounded or something. Yeah, I don't know what the right word is, but when I saw it, I thought, oh.
Yeah, right, it's slightly different, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, what great guests we have this week. As ever, whether famous, fascinating, a mix of the lot, or who knows what. Because everyone has a story, don't they? We have, in fact, had our first email from a listener proffering to be a guest themselves via emailed in audio, which is a thing you can do. Record a minute or two of an anecdote, trivia, a time when you met that person or that bizarre coincidence happened. Fascinate, entertain, enlighten us, by all means. paul@paulcarenza.com is us. And you could be on a future episode rubbing shoulders with Miranda, Tim, Belinda, Nick, Michael Bublé. You all right, Michael? Still saving your voice. All right, even though I was working alongside him for 3 days, including sitting front and centre for the tech rehearsal with him and the 50-piece orchestra, which was fantastic, by the way. Yes, it did prove tricky to try and get an interview with Mickey Booby for the podcast. I want to say it was such a joy to be along for the ride on that show. Michael is a gent. He is proper funny. And it was just lovely to be part of that. Like I said, I was just front and centre in the tech rehearsal. It was fantastic. There were seven other people in the entire studio audience, all at the back sorting lighting or his next flight or whatever. I thought, no, I'm going to get my $10,000 Vegas seats front and centre to watch Cry Me a River with a 50-piece orchestra. Blimey, Charlie, it was fantastic. I will say my only regret in doing the Bublé show was that when he wanted to rest his voice and he went off to the dressing room, the orchestra wanted to keep practicing and they got a stage manager to stand in, to just stand there by the mic to represent Michael. Full orchestra, full band, pelting out his hits. And I knew every word. I sing him at karaoke. I should have put myself forward to stand there, maybe give it some instead of that stage manager. Got him to click record, maybe even broadcast live. That would have been quite something. Anyway, he's not here. No Michael Bublé on the podcast this week. Sorry to say, I have to legally point out he is not here. His management team actually asked me to legally point that out. So We're not passing off as anything here. So there's no ruse here. There is no Buble. I'm stating that unequivocally. He is not here. I'm sorry. You can't knobble everyone you meet into being on the podcast. Anyway, right now, quickfire questions with some good friends of mine and some giggly friends of mine. Russ Anderson, as we heard on episode one, and Jennifer Masters, as heard on a previous podcast, Movie Banter. It's quickfire round.
Quick fire. I mean, quickfire.
Which of the seven wonders of the world would you visit with which of the seven dwarves while feeling which of the emotions of the seven deadly sins?
Wow.
I had Temple of Diana with the feeling of lust with Lusty.
Lusty, there's not one called Lusty.
So and Jennifer.
Well, I'd love to go and visit the Hanging
Gardens of Babylon
with
Hangy.
I don't have to tie Lucy into the one.
What's the happiest of dwarves?
Happy. They'll be happy.
I think he's going to
the clues in the
name. I'm sponsored by Disney. I don't know.
And what emotion are you feeling of the seven deadly sins?
Can I have happy?
That's not a sin.
Not a sin.
Not a sin.
Wow, what religion this,
is this? I had a quick fire question.
I love quick fire questions. Go back to fruit and stickers.
Let's go back to fruit and stickers. Which of the seven wonders of the world would you visit with which of the seven dwarves while feeling which emotion of the seven deadly sins?
Okay, I think I must feel lust for... Did I say dopey?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
People don't think of dopey, that's nice.
But also that sort of lust for... some calm,
right? Okay,
rather than lust.
Yes, fair enough. But
like, oh, lust. Yeah. Just, oh. Can I just have a nap?
Yeah.
So that would have to be in the Garden of Babylon, wouldn't it?
Right. Yeah, that's a good place
a
for a nap.
Gentle nap
it?
In a garden, slightly lusting over dopey.
That's nice. I like that answer because you've not just picked the ones that you know from the sins, the dwarves, and the wonders. You've got actually. Yeah. I quite like a sleep
that.
In a garden.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah.
It says a lot, doesn't it? I think
probably
nice.
Says a lot about my state of
mind. Fair enough. Wouldn't we all? I think it sounds a lovely place.
Yeah, lovely.
Okay, well...
with some finger food.
Another quick fire question. Yeah. Introvert, extrovert, advert, pervert, tennis player Chris Evert. Which are you and any plans to convert?
Love the question. But, I would say I'm going to convert to being a professional tennis player.
Very good. Mm. Very good. That's a good idea.
Yeah. I do, in my head, I am a tennis player.
Right, very good.
I'm going to win Wimbledon at 51.
Fancy. Great, just go in and do
start
it.
Start training from next year, so that would be 7 years of training.
Right, okay, yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah, very good.
They always say it's never too late.
It's never left for anything, especially professional tennis.
I think that's where the
that's the end of the famous
comes
saying.
From, actually.
Yeah, I think it is, isn't it? That's what they're
talking
from
all
what,
those middle-aged champions that
it's
you
what,
see.
Exactly, it's what it is. It's not a young man's game, is it?
It's
tennis,
so
anymore.
Not.
It really isn't.
And imagine trying to, you know, imagine me, seeing me at the net. You wouldn't want to lob that.
Come on.
You know,
yeah.
But the wingspan is huge.
I think you'd mix up Wimbledon. I think I'd like to see that. I think it'd be good.
Yeah.
I think it'd be good. Then you get that big plate and then just.
Yeah,
it'd be
and
great.
Then that's it, and then retire.
Take it home and use that for dinner.
Yeah.
It's great, isn't it?
Exactly.
That's
put
right.
some of the finger food on it.
Yeah, exactly, for the buffet.
Yeah.
Exactly, pass it around.
Exactly.
That's what you need to be doing at your celebratory party. Use the trophy, definitely, for that.
I have actually got a Ready, Steady, Cook winner's plate for that currently.
Really?
But I feel like that isn't... I mean, it was a deep honour, but I feel like the Wimbledon trophy would be just a little notch up.
So you won Ready, Steady, Cook, did you?
Yeah.
A career highlight. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Very good.
Thanks.
Didn't even know. Didn't
I think
even
I chopped
know.
A pepper.
That's right.
Now, of course, no Buble means that we are a guest down. We meant to be seven guests a week. Now we're at six. So I tell you what, let's see if I can get next episode star guest in a week early. Comedian Dominic Holland will be toast of the party next podcast with a tale you cannot miss about his son, Tom Holland, who overtook him career-wise to become not only a Hollywood actor, but amongst other things, the next Spider-Man. Yes, the Spider-Man story will be next time. Don't miss it. But for this week, here is Dominic Holland.
But I wanted to tell you this. So Tom made a movie last couple of years ago called In the Heart of the Sea.
Right.
With Ron Howard directing. It was a great experience. He made it in Tenerife and in London. And it was a great story about a whaling ship, a 19th century whaling ship. And it was a pretty gruesome shoot. They had to lose weight. And it was a long shoot, 6 months. And... anyway, the movie came out in Boxing Day 2015. And it had a big premiere in London, and Chris Hemsworth was there, Cillian Murphy, Ron Howard himself, and Tom, and, you know. And it was a really exciting night, Odeon Leicester Square, where I'd gone dancing as a kid, you know, just by the Empire nightclub, where I used to get in at 17, trying to get off with a girl, and they used to work. So it was lovely for me to be in London, where and the Comedy Store's there, where I've worked as a kid.
Of course, yeah, next road down.
Of course, and the old Comedy Store, and I thought, wow, this is Leicester Square, this is where I've really grown up, and I've worked, and this is my office, if you like. And so suddenly my son's there on a premiere, and it was really exciting. My wife was there, and we were on the carpet. The carpet was blue because it was in the heart of the sea, and there's just a bank of cameras and a bank of TV people from all over the world, and loads of fans. And it was very exciting, and I was obviously proud and happy to be there. But there were lots of people on the carpet who I didn't recognise. I mean, I knew the actors from the film, and there was lots of sort of young people who the paparazzi were going mad for. And I was a bit intrigued. I said to one of the people from the film, I said, who are these? Who's that lady there? Who's that lady there? He said, oh, these are X Factor contestants. They're in the X Factor this year.
Because that's going on at the time, isn't it? Of course, yeah.
That's going
on
at the time. Okay, and this is part of their journey, right. Part of their exposure. This is what it will be like if you win our competition. Okay. So they get to go on a red carpet, and it coincided with In the Heart of the Sea.
Yeah. Or a blue carpet, whatever.
Or a blue carpet. They get to go on a carpet, not in a house.
Right, okay. Not a course. Yeah, okay, yeah.
And so, you know, they were enjoying it, these kids, and they were posing for the cameras. And I was a bit bemused by it. Anyway, and I was really keen to get my four boys on the red carpet, on the carpet, and a photograph. That's the only photograph I wanted, was of the four boys on the carpet. And I was really, and it's very difficult because Tom's doing interviews, and I had to sort of corral Tom over. So, boys, are you ready for the photograph? And I had a professional photographer ready. I said, yeah, my mate's ready with the camera. Get the boys together. Boom. Put the four Holland boys there, including Tom. And someone then shoved a camera and a microphone in their faces, and it was someone from ITV. Mm. And it said, hey, boys, exciting, right? Exciting night. So who do you want to win the X Factor? And my boys sort of stared blankly, and I said, no, seriously, who do you want to win? And all of them said, almost in unison, dunno, we don't watch the X Factor. And that was the moment, that was the proudest moment of my entire night.
Oh, lovely.
Because I was so proud that my boys don't watch the X Factor. Never mind the premiere, and that Tom is in this movie, I just thought, that's there a moment,
go.
Eh?
There you go.
Hey, there's four kids here. Don't watch The X Factor. That's a good dad.
That's parenting for you.
Speaking of red carpets, Miranda was on the red carpet for the blockbuster film Spy with Melissa McCarthy.
Well, the red carpet is all I find sort of a mixture of terrifying and amusing.
Right.
Because you can't. It's an out-of-body experience. You can't believe it's you at the red carpet of a film that you're in, because that was sort of, for me, childhood dream stuff.
Surreal, isn't it? Yeah.
So I used to have pictures of people on red carpets with the bulbs going off, because I thought it was just so glamorous and exciting. And, you know, when I was a teenager, on my walls of my favourite actresses. So I was sort of thinking, this is weird, I'm doing a red carpet of a film. And it was more heightened than telly ones. Well, for telly, you know, I'm thinking of something like the BAFTA Awards, but obviously for television, we don't have...
You don't
there's
have
no
that,
red carpet.
No.
Episode one, red carpet.
Exactly. Flash, flash, flash. You're looking forward to it?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. As I walk into my house, I don't know what it
exactly,
would be.
Yeah.
So yeah. It was pretty sort of scary. But I do kind of love, actually, because I approach it from the perspective of being a fan.
Right, yes.
So even though I'd already spent 4 months with Melissa McCarthy, I was going, oh, Melissa, it's exciting. I thought, yeah, no, I know you, you're a friend. But anyway, yes. Red carpet.
Oh,
forgetting that I'm meant to be,
of course,
the cool
yes,
actress.
You're friends now, you're old pals.
But... Yeah, and the filming of it was amazing. We shot it all in Budapest, so I lived in Budapest for 3 months.
Oh, lovely.
Which is an amazing city. Melissa was wonderful. I got to meet and befriend my favourite actress of all time in Alison Janney.
Oh. Love Alison Janney.
And that, again, proper dream. Mm. I used to watch West Wing and think, could I just sit in the back and just watch them and watch her and wonder if she really is as tall as me? And if she got parts because she's tall, so maybe.
Mm. What's that thing she did in the West Wing, The Jackal?
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Came from her.
Oh, really?
Aaron Sorkin saw her outside her trailer doing it and wrote it in.
Well, yeah, it looks so good. You know, she had to have known that. She couldn't have learned that from the script.
It.
That was amazing.
Yeah. She's a hip-hop fiend.
Is she as good as she wanted to be?
Yeah, she's amazing. Amazing. And we're the same height, so that was exciting.
Oh, that's always nice as well. That's rare.
And when I did a scene with her, again, total out-of-body experience, just thinking I'm standing next to Alison Jack. Sorry, hang on, she's my favourite. I don't understand what's happened to mine.
Yeah.
And it's not often I do that. I'm very rarely starstruck, weirdly.
Mm.
Normally it's quite sort of get home and go, I can't believe I just met that person, whereas in the moment it seems sort of relatively normal.
Yeah.
Whereas meeting Alison Janney, I went a little nutty.
We like to end in our final corner, the bay window of wisdom.
I would say don't forget to jolly life up.
That's very good.
Do something every day to make you joyful, however simple.
Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I like to part with.
Yeah, that's very nice. It's like, so it's really the mantra of the... What have you done today to make you feel proud? Jolly life up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just, you know, life is difficult, isn't it?
Mm.
Might be people listening who are ill.
Yes.
Or in hospital or something. And even then, you can just find something that you can then go to bed that night thinking, something jolly happened today.
Yeah, that's always nice, isn't it?
And don't forget to email Paul about stickers on fruits.
Stickers on fruits, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, and maybe even progressing the following to vegetables.
Very true.
Mm.
That we can build onto that.
Yeah. Talking of vegetables, because you are Mr. Veg2Pal.
Oh, Veg2Pal.
You actually wrote
that's
that.
That's true. I think. Yeah. Yes, I did.
You did.
Yeah, I'm going to be proud of this fact now. Yes.
You definitely wrote that.
Veg2Pal.
I added on a Mr. Butternut, I think.
Oh, right. Yeah, something like that, right.
And then insisted that we needed to be a prop of said butternut.
And it was a delight.
There would never have been a butternut had you not come up with Veg2Pal.
Very true. And it was a delight to see it in the flesh, in the vegetable flesh.
Yeah.
To actually go, oh yes, that's...
In fact, that was the episode you were in.
It was, I think, wasn't it? I think it was. It's always nice to see those moments where you go, oh, that's good to know that one little writing thing caused that thing to happen.
Indeed, do email in your observations or fruit with stickers or about anything else for that matter, paul@paulcarenza.com, especially if you fancy recording a short audio burst of your voice, of your tale, for us to feature on a future episode. Next time, it's movie night. Dominic Holland, Juliet Burton, Abdul Rahman Malik, my old movie banter colleagues John and Jed, all on the next episode, which, as ever, will land in 2 to 3 weeks.
Hey, you, has anybody said to you today?
Do tell your friends, do spread the word of us.
Your love,
like us on Facebook,
has made the world a better place.
Subscribe, rate us, 5 stars
you
and a short write-up.
Positively beautiful in your blue jeans.
Music by Rob Halligan.
It doesn't matter what you wear.
Thank you to all my guests this week.
For me,
tune in to Boobly at the BBC if you like. Sorry, he's not a guest. We will get him next time. Okay, we won't. We'll get other people. But do join us then. Thanks for listening.